Bandwidth for this podcast is provided by CacheFly at cachefly.com. This is the iPhone Alley Podcast, episode 45 for June 15th, 2009, the second coming of the iPhone 3G. All right, it is time for the iPhone Alley Podcast. I'm Michael Johnston, and this is where we talk about the iPhone, iPod Touch, the iPhone 3G, the iPhone 3GS. There's a space in between there. And with me tonight, as always, is Mr. Jeff Gamet from the Mac Observer. Hey, Jeff.
Hey, and as always, it's a blast to be here.
Yeah, and you sound extra silky smooth tonight, and that's because we're using a new Skype, right?
That's right. The latest Skype beta build.
So if,
which gives us that that sweet, sexy sound that you hear in our voices.
Mm-hmm. And if it gets, well, if you guys don't like it for whatever reason, it's different for me, obviously. But yeah, you can drop us an email, podcast@iPhoneAlley.com. I think that's it. Yeah. Also here from the MacCast is Adam Christensen. Hey, Adam.
Hey, good to be back.
Good to have you. How was your vacation?
It was awesome. It was awesome. I was tuned out pretty much for a week, other than, of course, Monday when I had to be locked down at a Starbucks near the campsite because I was camping. I was in,
you were in the middle
of nowhere at the beach.
In the deep woods of California.
No, not woods. Actually on the coast at Pismo Beach, yeah. Hanging out with the clams.
Cool.
Okay, yeah. You know, Adam, the thing that I love about that is that you said you were out in the middle of nowhere. And yet there was still a Starbucks close by for you to be able to get to.
Yeah, I had to drive. I mean, let's not, it wasn't like I hiked over the dune and there was a Starbucks, but yeah.
Well, I should give a shout out to our friend Barry Folk. He is letting me borrow his TomTom because I plan on going on a road trip very soon. And I noticed that it hasn't been really customized all that much, except for he has this special Starbucks overlay on it. So everywhere I drive, there are little Starbucks logos.
Nice.
And I went to go pick it up from him at his house, and we showed up and said, hey, and he's like, all right, it's in the car. Let's go get it. I'm like, well, we should go like get some coffee and like hang out for, and he's like, okay, I'm really not supposed to leave, but I'll do it for Starbucks because he's crazy about the Starbucks. And so they actually knew his name as we went in. And of course I lost everybody.
Dude, that's what you get for running beta software.
Dude, don't. we're all running the beta software. So yeah.
But you're hosting, so it's your fault.
Okay. Well, I mean, we either get Silky Jeff or, stable quote unquote Skype.
So, nice, Michael. You broke Skype.
Yeah. Well, I think, we're not going to get into that again. But yeah, so that's the Barry Folk story.
Barry's a cool guy.
He is. He's awesome. We met him at the podcast expo.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so let's talk about iPhone stuff, shall we?
Well, you know, I was going to ask you too. You didn't want to hold out and wait for the you don't have time to hold out and wait for the TomTom app for your iPhone.
Well, I might. I mean, it really comes down to, I'll be literally traveling thousands of miles from home. And if my iPhone, goes funky, it's nice to have a GPS. That, and I'm going to be using my phone most of the time for tethering, I think.
Which network are you on?
AT&T.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but I figured out how to get around it. I figured out how to enable it. I'm not sure if I want to let everybody know at this point how to do it.
Yeah, it's okay to be selfish and wait until after your trip and then tell people how to do it.
It's not about being selfish. It's about, I kind of want to wait, so Apple doesn't lock it down right away anyway. So, yeah, let's get into it. The iPhone 3.0 Gold Master has been put up on the torrents, I think. I don't know. I don't really know firsthand. Honestly, I don't know firsthand because I am a legit part of a development team. But
I was going to say, isn't the last time that stuff was from Apple was put up on the torrents, isn't that when everybody got a nice Trojan? to play with?
Yeah, that would have been for Photoshop and
iWork.
Yeah. Well, so go to a trusted site, I guess. I'm not condoning that at all.
like a trusted pirate site, yes.
A trusted there is such a thing. I'm not going to talk about it anymore, though, because I don't want to get myself into trouble. I've never actually been to a torrent site. I don't even really know what I'm talking about. You guys don't know what torrents are, do you? Except for Linux distros, right? We download Linux distros.
Right.
Yeah, of course. Nothing else.
And South by Southwest, they put legit torrents of concerts up.
Okay, yeah. So we get those too.
Right.
Yeah.
Other than that, I don't know anything about BitTorrent.
Yeah, me neither. But yeah, so the Gold Master is actually like full on the actual Gold Master. So if you do find it and put it on your iPhone and you're not a developer, it doesn't require that you are registered as a developer to activate. It's the full-on Gold Master that they'll be putting on the 3GS, I assume. Or there'll probably be a slightly different build. But it's definitely the one that they're going to be releasing on the 17th, I think. So
a whole 3 days. So if you can't have it between, and in the next day and a half, go grab it off the torrent.
Yeah, go grab it off the torrent.
But, some kids have a really hard time waiting until the actual official day of an event.
Kid name being Jeff.
Well, I know that there must be some kid named Jeff out there that has trouble waiting. Now, I was the kid at Christmas that was okay waiting until Christmas morning to unwrap the presents.
Right.
My sister, on the other hand, was the one that was trying to come up with all the clandestine ways to unwrap presents without getting caught ahead of time. So she would be the one, if she had an iPhone, to go hunting for the torrent.
Gotcha. So have we all, Adam, I think you're, am I allowed to say this, that you have 3.0?
Yes, I have 3.0.
Jeff, do you have 3.0?
I don't have 3.0.
Oh, okay. Well, you're missing out on a lot of sluggishness and all that, so.
Really?
Sweet.
Yeah, well, okay,
let's talk about this. I mean, I just updated mine to the latest build, and things seemed a little snappier for me.
Well, yeah, definitely a little snappier than the previous build.
Yes.
For sure. But I've noticed that because I have the nifty iStat application that, I've definitely seen that it's been sluggish, and I pop that open and I see that, all of my RAM has been used up once again. And I just restarted. So are you not getting any sort of sluggishness, or?
I was on vacation, so I received the update, but I did not install it till literally probably 2 hours ago.
Okay.
So I've had about 5 minutes to spend with it. But the first thing I noticed when I popped it open was that, flipping through screens seemed faster, launching apps seemed faster. Safari seemed hugely faster.
Yeah.
For whatever reason.
Yeah, that is one of the things that they said that they were changing in this version. So I think it's
I'm a first gen iPhone, so people need to know that too. So I'm seeing more snappiness out of a first gen iPhone. I don't even have a 3G, so I have no idea what it's going to be like on a 3GS.
Yeah, so it is snappier, in general. But I think that I say it's snappier than the previous beta builds. So I think if you're used to 2.2.1, then you'll still think that it's a little sluggish. And honestly, it takes up a lot of RAM, which is very surprising. Does it seem like they could maybe have just kind of stopped really focusing on the other phones and then just said, well, we have the 3GS, we don't have to be as tight with our memory?
I hope not, but I mean that's one of the other things you have in the notes to talk about, I think, right? And I hadn't heard about this with the games either. The concern over the games.
Okay,
but
yeah.
I hope that's not the route we're going down. I mean, like I said, with mine it seems snappier on my first gen. Now I've been running the beta since build 3, so I may have forgotten what 2.2.1 was like, but I would agree with you saying the earlier builds were really, like, I was having just, last week some issues where just even trying to slide between screens was taking, half a second, a second or something like that. And I was getting really frustrated with it.
Yeah. The only thing I have a little bit of a clunkiness with is the spotlight. I think the first, like the very first time you open it up, it there's a little bit of a delay, but then you know it's nice and zippy past that. But yeah, so you mentioned the NG Moco story, and they basically said that they're going to be building their applications in a fashion that they would take advantage of the 3GS and its new graphics and CPU. But that they would have it set up to, you know, be perfectly compatible on the other phone. So it wouldn't require it. It would just kind of, you know, drop back gracefully on features.
You know, I'm not a developer, so someone will probably correct me and point out my ignorance. But from what I understand, the way the coding works for the chips in the 3GS is very different from the 3G and the first gen iPhone. So I would assume that means if you're going to write an application that is compatible with both as far as the video processing goes, that you'd have to have a substantially bigger application because you'd have to have like two sets of code in there.
Well, I think that that's abstracted through the APIs, right?
Right. So I think that's what Jeff's kind of alluding to. I mean, this is sort of like what we've had with
on OS X
support
on the Mac.
For PowerPC. What?
On OS X on the Mac. But
yeah, with universal binaries. So it sounds like maybe there's a similar thing going on. I haven't delved into the developer kit either. But I mean, that's basically how it was handled there. You flipped a switch and it just did the build, but it made things twice as big, which is one of the reasons why I think Apple's saying you're gaining so much space back with Snow Leopard, because they've optimized everything for Intel and they can get rid of a lot of the old PowerPC code. So I think things I've been reading about that say it's because, you know, well, now we're able to kind of strip out PowerPC support. So yeah, apps might be getting a little bit larger, but I mean, really, how much larger? Because most iPhone apps aren't that large. I guess, you know, people with a 4 gig iPhone or someone like myself with a first gen 8 gig might run into some storage problems, but I think overall it wouldn't be that big a deal. And that would be the best way for Apple to handle it, is say, hey, flip the switch. It will build and run on the older hardware and the newer hardware, just with a little slightly different feature set.
Well, the Samsung processor that they're using in the 3G in the original iPhone is an ARM class processor, and as well as, you know, the 3GS has what is it? The ARM Cortex A8, which is also an ARM CPU. So I don't know if they need to do anything fancy like universal binaries in that case.
Right.
But as far as the graphics, I assume that that's just kind of abstracted through the APIs. I doubt, you know, because they have OpenGL and all that stuff. So I doubt they're actually writing low-level code for the specific graphics processor. I'm sure there are a few developers who have done that, which is, I think, probably outside of what Apple recommends doing. You know, but, you know, places like NG Moco, I'm sure, you know, understand how to do that.
Now, has all this been confirmed with the new processors? Because, again, I was kind of out of touch. I'm just getting caught back up. I was back late yesterday and kind of through today. I've been trying to catch up on everything. But I did see, I think you pointed to the story where it was kind of leaked through, was it T-Mobile or somebody, the actual hardware specs of the new GS with more RAM and the bigger processor? Because I know that was a rumor leading up to the announcement, but Apple really didn't talk about it at the event.
Well, I'm looking at a story from AnandTech, which has the breakdown of how the system works. And so it is using, looking, the ARM Cortex A8 and the PowerVG SGX for the graphics. So it's just like the pre.
Okay.
Yeah. But, I mean, that would make sense as far, and that it does also use 256 megs of RAM as opposed to the 128 on the other iPhones. So, I mean, that'll, honestly, I think just even the RAM itself being double is going to really help performance.
Yeah.
Because the phone is fairly snappy when, you know, the RAM isn't filled up and it's starting to page out. And I think paging on a phone is kind of silly.
Yeah.
So.
Well, the idea of having applications that are using so much memory on a phone that they have to page out that just seems kind of weird to me.
Well, I think that developers are supposed to only code for so much memory, and if it goes too big, then it just quits out. I mean, if you look at applications such as Looptastic, for example, uses a lot of memory because it's loading samples. If you have been using your phone for a while and haven't necessarily cleared out your memory with an application like iStat, or, you know, applications haven't been taking care of garbage collection correctly, then it'll say, hey, you know, you don't have enough free RAM, reboot your phone. So I don't think they're allowed to take up, you know, so much RAM.
Okay.
I have never seen that message, by the way.
Really? Yeah, a lot of applications. I don't know if that's a system message or if it's done by the developer. I think the information's available to the developer to do something when that happens. So I think maybe the developer pops that message up, because I have only seen it on specific applications.
Yeah, makes sense. I mean, it makes sense that you could run into that, especially like you said, if the app developer isn't taking care of the garbage collection and freeing up memory, you know, releasing the memory back as they should be, you could very quickly, with only 128, run into that issue.
Yeah. So back to the discussion about, you know, 3.0 and the Goldmaster and all that. I'm thinking that, you know, with 2.0, we saw I think probably even more problems that we're going to be seeing on 3.0, because, you know, back then they had just introduced the SDK and all of that. But I think the sluggishness and a lot of, you know, the memory issues and that kind of stuff will probably go away in like a 3.1 update. I think they, you know, got everything together as much as they could to load 3.0 up onto the 3GS, you know, because they're already clearly in production. You know, we've seen unboxing photos already. And so...
Right.
So, yeah. Have your magic minions over at the Mac Observer gotten a hold of the 3GS yet?
You know, no one is telling me yet if they got to touch one. And you'd think they'd tell me first.
Well, so I'm kind of the guy, but yeah.
Yeah, so I'm assuming that means that none of my minions have been able to get their hands on one yet.
And they just don't want to fess up that they haven't.
Probably. That would make sense, because if anyone has one already, I would get on a plane and fly where they are.
Yeah, well, who was at the announcement from TMO? Was Brian there?
Brian was there. Dave was there.
Oh, yeah, Dave was there, of course.
Yeah, John Martellaro was there.
So everybody was there.
Yeah, well, yeah, I also had Ted Landau and Bob Levitis there.
Wow. Well, that's quite a crew. Were they all there mostly just for WWDC?
They were all there. Well, Dave and John and Ted were there all week long.
Okay.
And Bob flew in for the first couple days so that he could do his Apple briefing. And then Brian was there for the keynote event.
Gotcha. Wow, that's quite a crowd for the from TMO.
Yeah, five people there. And then on keynote day, I just pretty much chained myself to my computer and just sat here all day.
Yeah, we had some fantastic help from a developer who just relayed everything for our live coverage. So that was awesome.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, it totally rocks. That meant I didn't have to fly out there or anything, even though I was invited to that super cool iPhone party.
I wanted to go to that.
That would have been cool.
I was about to drive up for that, because I was only about 4.5 hours away. I was like, ugh.
That's the one where Cake played, right?
Did Cake play?
Cake played.
At Arnold Kim's party?
Oh, you know, I don't know if it was Arnold's party.
Or was it the WWDC party? Because that sounds more
I bet that's what it was at.
Yeah, they have a developer bash, I think, at the Yerba Buena place.
That might have been where it was. But Cake played at WWDC.
Mm.
Yeah, that was the big launch party. No, I was referring to the one that Michael was, it was like iPhone application launch party or something like that. I can't remember.
Yeah, I think it was iPhone launch party. I think that's what it was called. But
okay.
They had a lot of people like from Delicious Monster and Tap 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 all giving, you know, exclusive first looks of their new applications. They had Freeverse there too and a bunch of other developers. But, you know, essentially I haven't seen the Freeverse games in person. The application that Delicious Monster released was essentially the widget application that they briefed me on at Macworld. So it kind of integrates with Delicious Library on the Macintosh. I said Macintosh. Who calls it the Macintosh anymore?
I do.
Oh, well, high five.
Yeah. Woof. There we go. Mm-hmm. That was a long distance via internet high five. Sweet.
It felt good. Okay. Yeah. So let's see. Angry AT&T and O2 customers are doing a Twitter petition for lower iPhone 3GS upgrade prices. Now,
yeah, I think because online petitions carry so much weight.
Mm-hmm, especially on Twitter.
And especially with AT&T.
Oh, yeah.
Like they give a rat's.
I don't think they've been to anybody. The internet. I don't think AT&T actually knows what the internet is. But
well, I can use that to my advantage.
Jeff, were you guys at the original iPhone launch with the AT&T CEO?
Oh, eyes bleeding and pain. Sitting there.
The note card guy?
Yeah, the extra big note cards. I don't think that guy's ever been to the internet.
Yeah, I remember sitting there at the keynote and wanting to send out to our live coverage stream, just kill me now.
I see the difference between TMO and IPA is that I would have sent that message out.
You know, it's good that we have little things like this to differentiate ourselves so people know which news site they're getting information from.
Yeah. So like, for example, during the app demos at WWDC, I invited everybody to go get a sandwich with me and or play keynote bingo while they were doing the presentations because it was totally boring.
I commented a lot about that on my post WWDC coverage show with Victor Cahiao, and I kind of regret it in some ways because in looking back and kind of rewatching it and stuff like that, Apple did do a good job with, I have to remind myself it's a developer conference. It's for the developers.
Right,
I'm sure there's a lot of developers in the audience who are probably very bored at that point as well, but they're trying to showcase certain developers and kind of give back. And so that's like their little bit of time to be in the spotlight.
Yeah.
And they did do a very good job in picking applications that really focused on new features that were in the iPhone 3, the iPhone 3.0 software. So they kind of hit each bullet point in terms of a new feature set, like, a device attached to the dock or something that used, some of the new features. So as boring as that was for those of us on the outside, I kind of see why Apple does it. I think overall what they need to reconsider, though, is the total length of the keynote. 2 hours is getting a bit long.
I don't know. Well, maybe if they bring back Steve, then it doesn't matter. He can go on for 5 hours and we'll
No. An hour is awesome. An hour and a half I can deal with. When it starts getting 2 hours, that's too much.
Yeah. Expect a song and dance, like a big chorus number in the middle somewhere if it's going to be 2 hours long.
Or at least a potty break.
Like a music break.
Jesus, yeah. I was at Starbucks and I had to pee like a racehorse and I couldn't leave.
Well, the one thing that was really just like smack dab in the middle of all those that really kind of perked me up was the fact that Scott Forstall essentially put on like a bunny suit.
You see, some of the stuff that happened during that keynote presentation, I had to go back later and verify that's what really happened because I was sedated on codeine all Monday. And so, and of course, codeine, it's a hallucinogen. So I had to go back and double check. Did Scott really do the bunny suit thing? And there's a couple other things too. But I had to go back and look and make sure. Yeah, that's really what happened. Okay.
Mm.
Did you talk about this already? Because if you have, just shut me up. But what did you talk about your overall impressions of the keynote on your show yet?
I think we did, but we were still kind of hopped up on whatever it is we were hopped up on.
It was just a great keynote. So I'll just make that comment.
I thought it was good too.
In the rankings of keynotes, it was pretty impressive. I was blown away, and I was not expecting new Mac hardware, which was a little surprising. So
okay, and we won't go into the Mac hardware because go check out the Mac Jury podcast with Chuck Joyner. Jeff and I well, mostly Jeff and the other guys, because I'm the iPhone guy and I'm not allowed to talk about the Mac. but we did talk a little bit about the new Macs and all that. So check that
yeah,
out.
Yeah. And I was invited to that and I had to cancel at the last minute, unfortunately, because family plans changed during the trip. So
that would have been a full on iPhone Ellie podcast plus two, well, three. Math.
Yeah. But Chuck's show is great. Yeah. So it definitely, I'm going to listen to it myself because I missed it.
So. Yeah.
So. Yeah. I'm kind of disappointed some of my outtakes aren't in there. I'm just saying.
Yeah. I take all the outtakes and put them in there.
Oh, so, you know, not to go off this track, but moving it back to.
No, please take us back.
What we were talking about with the pricing. So mm-hmm. that the petition and the upgrade pricing.
Yeah.
You know, I was going through my stories and the Macalope. Do you guys read the Macalope's WWDC Fallout article?
I haven't. I love the Macalope.
Yeah. And I thought he kind of hit it on the head, which was, and something I never really thought about, but he makes the poignant point of saying that the problem with this is that everybody calls this thing that AT&T does a subsidy, right? They're subsidizing the price of the iPhone. It's not. It's a loan. AT&T really internally views this thing. I mean, if you think about it, they view it as a loan. We're giving you the money up front so that you can afford this device, and then we want it all back.
Yeah.
So, you know, anybody who bought the 3G, if they suddenly subsidize a 3GS for them, it's like they're floating them a loan on top of a loan, and it's just some sort of bad business deal. So, you know, I understand why they're not doing it. I also understand the outrage on the other side, and I think he says the same thing in his article, but... You know, it's sort of like the problem is we're all calling this thing the wrong thing and everybody's assuming it's just like AT&T's making, you know, they are making gobs of money. But at the end of the day, too, they're beholden to shareholders and other things. And as evil as they are, and they are pure evil, I mean, all cell phone companies are pure evil, though. They all play this game and it is a game and we're stuck in the middle of it and a bunch of us are getting screwed. You know, meaning those people who bought a 3G when it came out. And I don't know why they were so kind the last time and let everybody, you know, sort of re-subsidize on the 3G. The only thing I can think of is because so many people bought it early at the full, you know, ridiculous $600 price, that it wasn't really that subsidized early on. So the loan wasn't that big. So they were kind of okay re-giving everybody a new loan when the 3G came out. But it's like this time around, they're going, you know what? We really subsidized you or gave you a loan heavily this last time. We're not going to do it again because we just flat out can't afford it.
Well, Jeff, hopefully you'll be able to back me up on this, but I'm thinking that we paid full retail to Apple for the first iPhone, right? Regardless of whether or not we got the $200.
Yeah, the first iPhone was pretty much just a full cost device. So it wasn't until the 3G came out that there was any sort of discount incentive to buy the device. And you're right, Adam, it's like a loan. So the people that bought the iPhone 3G, they got to take advantage of that loan because they'd already bought their iPhone at full price, their first gen iPhone.
Right.
And now that the iPhone 3GS is coming out, if you didn't already have a contract or your first gen iPhone owner, you should be able to take advantage of the loan because you haven't had the loan yet.
Right, yeah.
But 3G owners, well, they already got that. So we have to take our little bitter pill and pay more than other people for our phone.
Or wait.
Yeah. Okay, so let's talk about the pricing real quick because I think... I don't know if we talked about it on Chuck's show or this show, or it doesn't matter. It's worth repeating, I think. So, Jeff, because I can't remember right off the top of my head, what are the prices depending on your situation?
All right. So if you're new to AT&T or if you're a first-gen iPhone owner, so you'd be ending your two-year contract, it's, what, it's $199 for the 16 gig iPhone, and then $299 for the 32 gig iPhone.
And I'm assuming also, I haven't checked into it, if you're a first gen iPhone owner, I'm guessing, because that's my situation, that I'm also going to get to pay the nice $18 upgrade fee.
You'll pay the $18 upgrade
fee. And an activation fee as well. Isn't that nice?
Yeah, because, well, the SIM card that you have in your first gen iPhone becomes worthless as soon as you do the upgrade, because they're going to give you a new phone.
Yep.
Or a new SIM card. Now, for those of us that have a 3G iPhone and go to the 3GS, I don't know if they're going to make us get new SIM cards.
I'm pretty sure that they will because, I just remember from the first generation iPhone, when you went in there and did the whole dance with getting your new phone, as soon as you plugged that thing into iTunes and activated it, your old SIM card was rendered worthless because in AT&T's right. mind, that account was transferred to a new SIM. And you can swap out SIMs. You can, go to the store and say, hey, I need a new SIM. And they'll say, oh, okay, let me just register this new SIM card with your account. And so the account is tied with the unique identification of the SIM card. And so when you get the iPhone 3GS or whatever iPhone, they don't say, give me your old SIM. There's already a SIM card in there. And so I'm assuming with people who buy the iPhone 3GS online and have it shipped to their house, I'm thinking that the phone, their old phone, will not be, if it's an upgrade, will not be rendered useless until you plug it into iTunes and hit the activate.
That would make sense. And I'm assuming that for all first-gen iPhone owners that go to 3GS, they'll end up with the new SIM card, just like we did when we got our iPhone 3G. And it would make sense that going from 3G to 3GS would be the same thing. Although since at that point it would be, hey, you're buying a phone and just extending your contract as opposed to starting with a whole new thing. Who knows? Maybe they'll save a little plastic this time around. But anyhow, the rest of the pricing. So if you're 18 months into your contract.
I thought you said
more,
it was 6 months.
That's if you go into an AT&T store. You go online and you're at least 18 months into your contract, then you get the $200 discount off of the full price.
Which brings you down to the normal.
Which brings you down, yeah. So that would make the 16 gig iPhone, $399?
Okay, gotcha.
And then the 32 gig would be $499?
Yeah.
And, but if you go into an AT&T store and you're at least 6 months into your contract, what they told me was that they will make sure that you get that $200 discount.
It's the early upgrade fee.
Right.
As opposed to the full subsidized cost.
Right. And then, if you just have to pay full price for the phone, it's $599 and $699.
And what I've heard about... Oh. Okay, go ahead, Adam.
Well, so my question immediately becomes, and this was the same way when pricing got all wonky in the 3G upgrade. So at this point, why wouldn't you, if you were in that situation, because AT&T prorates your early cancellation fee, right? Which I think starts out at like $175.
I think so, yeah.
So doesn't it work out more cost beneficial to you to simply end your existing contract, pay the whatever penalty it is, and then resubsidize and re-up for a new iPhone?
Do you get to keep your phone number if you do that?
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. I don't know.
And I don't know the answer to that.
Do you want to save money or do you want to keep your phone number?
I want to keep my phone number.
Yeah, for me, my phone number is worth the entry fee.
So, I mean, there's a valid point that I hadn't thought about. But, this was the same argument I made before. Because if you're 6 months in, it's prorated. If you're a year in, it's prorated even more. So you might be paying, $100, $120 to cancel your existing contract. But then you get the... $300 discount on the new phone. So aren't you coming out ahead at the end of all that?
And I would say, yes, you are.
Yeah. So, but I think for a lot of iPhone 3G owners, you probably have the early upgrade fee or early upgrade cost available to you. I've seen in our forums some people posting that they're getting the early upgrade cost, automatically on, if they go to apple.com and hit the buy on iPhone. but for some other people, that's not the case. And AT&T is saying that it's an error, I guess, which is why you would go into an AT&T store and say, hey, fix it. If that's the case for you, if it shows up as, that price. And of course we lost Adam with the Skype.
Because Skype is a beautiful, magical thing.
Mm-hmm.
And the sad thing is, to be able to get Adam back into the podcast right now, there's someone at Skype headquarters killing a unicorn.
Yeah, I think that's how they do it.
I'm pretty sure.
And now it's not going to work at all. It's not working. But
what the hell is going on?
Oh well, it's the Skype, and we're leaving all this in, so it doesn't matter.
Yeah, Michael had to put another quarter into Skype.
That's how the sausage is made, folks. It's delicious sausage.
I hope it's delicious.
So yeah, if you have had the bottom line is, if you've had your AT&T contract 3G or not for more than 6 months, can you call AT&T, or do you have to actually physically go in there?
I think you have to go in
and say, "Look, lady, here's the deal."
And the guy will say, "What the hell? I'm not a lady." And you say, "I don't care, lady. I want my discount."
Yeah.
They and love it when you do that.
When you belittle them. Yeah. So for me, and I don't know if this is going to help anybody, but the way I'm weaseling out of paying a whole bunch of money for my 3GS is for, I gave my mother my original iPhone when I got the iPhone 3G. And so she killed her T-Mobile and signed up with AT&T. And that wasn't a subsidized phone. So regardless of when she got it and signed up, it wasn't subsidized. So she can get an iPhone 3GS. And she has no desire to upgrade at all. So I said, "Look, I will use your account information. I'll go into the Apple store and say, I am, you know, this person and my mother, and I will, you know, buy the
phone."
And
I'm sure they'll totally buy that you are your mother.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's not, I mean, I just...
You're going to wear a dress, aren't you?
I did wear a dress. That, and I had, you know, her social security number, which is kind of, you know, verifies it. That and the dress. But, yeah, then I purchased the phone, obviously with my own monies. And so that's being sent to me. And when that does come to me, I will just pop my SIM card into the 3GS, and she will put her, I guess, the 3GS SIM card, I assume that's how it's going to work, into my 3G. And ta-da, she has an iPhone 3G, which is an upgrade to her, which didn't really cost anything, and I get the 3GS.
Cool.
Yeah. I mean, she does have to pay another, what, $15 a month, because, you know, the data cost in the text messages, but she loves her son. And she's getting
this is the reason I haven't this is really the reason why I haven't upgraded. It has nothing to do with the hardware. It actually has to do with paying AT&T $30 a month.
It's retarded.
For two phones, because I'm on a family plan and I would have to upgrade both, and it's a big pain in the ass, and they're evil. I said that earlier, right? They're pure evil.
I think so.
You know, okay. I did the math, and it looks to me like for two people, you in many cases are better off not doing a family plan, because you can get more minutes all the way around by having separate accounts.
Yeah, see, this is the weird thing on minutes too, because everybody talks about AT&T and the minutes and the Palm Pre, and they've got the unlimited plan, and it's $99 a month. My plan ends up essentially being unlimited, because I use the phone like 0% of the time, and I use the data like 100% of the time, which is, I think, AT&T's problem right now, is that everybody uses the data on the iPhone and very few people use the minutes, because they have the rollover. So I get, yeah, my family plan sucks. It's like 400 minutes shared, right?
Right.
The problem is we use like 100 of those minutes. So I get 300 every month, and I've been getting that for 2 years. So you do the math, and it's like I have a bazillion million minutes.
I have gobs of rollovers too.
So it's a moot point, you know, at that level.
Yeah, I think most of us can probably handle just signing up for the bare minimum worth of minutes. But you're talking about the family plans and how they're...
Because the minutes suck. He's right. I mean, the minutes on the family plan is 400 shared. Whereas I think if you get the individual plan, you get even more than that for each line, right?
450, right. I think.
Yeah. And actually what I ended up doing after having my 3G for months and months, I realized that I spend a lot more time texting and having automated messages come into me. So I ended up switching my phone plan and dropping it down to the minimum minutes and then bumping up my SMS plan. And I still don't go over because so many of the people that I talk to every month have an iPhone or another AT&T phone. And then, of course, you don't pay for those phone calls.
Okay.
Now, here's a weird thing on the SMS, though. I think Victor Cahiao told me that AT&T's SMS unlimited, you can get unlimited SMS on the family plan for all of your phones for like $20 a month, which is, I think, what it costs for one phone. So,
yeah.
Like, yeah, I think I'm paying AT&T's
evil.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Can you make a family plan? Like, can you say, I have two phones, we are, you know, in the same family, let's hop on a family plan? Or do you have to be a new subscriber kind of deal?
Now, if you already have a phone, you can add more and then turn it into a family plan.
Okay. Do you have unlimited texting, Jeff?
No, I have, what's the step below that? Like 1500 a month?
Yeah.
That's what I'm doing.
So you're cool with all the poop with smiley faces that I send you every day?
I am.
Okay, yeah.
And, you know, it warms my heart, and and I'd be afraid that you're mad at me if I wasn't getting your smiley poop.
Yeah, obviously.
Right.
So, not to keep us off topic, though, did you guys talk about just how badly AT&T dorked this thing up overall?
I mean, we've
talked about the pricing thing, okay, but that's only like... That's like a minute point of how badly they've dorked up this upgrade.
You know, honestly, I think we may have touched on it on the previous episode, but I have a feeling we all love, you know, ripping on AT&T.
You know, I'm like going to take
the tethering, the you know, not having MMS ready. What's up with that?
That makes zero sense. The MMS thing,
that's bad.
What the heck? All the other AT&T phones have MMS, but I mean, I think... Would we all agree that it's they're, you know, scared completely that, you know, as soon as they turn on MMS for all these iPhone people, that their network is just going to be brought to its knees?
As well, they should be scared.
That's absolutely. I mean, it is absolutely it, because they've already proven. Like I said, I use my iPhone almost zero for voice and 100% for data. And there's been tons of studies that have shown that iPhone owners are surfing the web. They're doing, you know, SMS, they're doing email, we use our phones more than any other type of mobile customer for data. And yeah, I think it will, especially, you know, they're going to get all these 3GSs on there and people are going to be pushing video around, and it's just, it's already going to crush their network. They have no idea what they're going to do.
Yeah.
But did I read also that they're not ready on the 7.2 either for the 3GS launch?
Right.
Nice. That's really nice.
Wow. So what's the ETA on the 7.2?
I'm not expecting it till next year. That's my Jedi instincts.
Have they said anything, or they just said not available?
Well, they're working on rolling it out in select cities, from what I understand, which means that by Macworld Expo, there'll probably be, hopefully, San Francisco will have the 7.2 network by that point, and probably a couple other cities. But I'm not expecting to see a wide scale rollout of the 7.2 or 3G 3.5, whatever they're calling it, until sometime in 2011.
And this is exactly why I am not upgrading day one. I mean, I was fully ready to do it. But after the keynote, I'm like, I have no incentive to really upgrade. I'm going to get the 3.0 software on my first gen. And really, what am I gaining by getting new hardware? I'm not getting faster networking. I'm not getting MMS. I'm not getting tethering.
Like, well, Adam, first of all, I'll tell you how to enable the tethering. I'll do that for you.
Well, without paying?
Without paying, yeah.
Okay, well,
yeah. Okay,
great.
So, you get a faster Safari, right? Didn't they say it's, Jeff, do you know how many?
Well, yeah, because the processor and stuff like that. But I'm not complaining now, I guess, is my point.
Okay.
You know, like, there's nothing with my current phone where I'm going, God, if this was this much better. You know, MMS I would love to have. The Compass would be kind of a neat feature. I'm sure there's going to be some great apps taking advantage of it. I know there's things, but My point is AT&T has given me no incentive to like need to rush out, and this is their problem. This is what they're not thinking about. Although, you know, I was reading today that they're sold out of the pre-orders, so maybe they don't freaking care, which is probably what the reality is. But you know, I'm looking at people who might come to me and say, "Should I upgrade? Do I need to upgrade?" And I'm going, "Well, if you're on AT&T, no, because you know, why pay the extra money? What's the rush to upgrade? What's the huge incentive? I just don't see that much because not because of Apple hasn't built great hardware and doesn't have a bunch of great new features in this device, but because AT&T has dorked up the network stuff so bad that it's not even ready for it. Sorry. That's just kind of how I'm feeling at this point.
Mm-hmm. You know, I'm going to go back just a little bit, only a few moments in time, back to the pricing thing.
Before you do that, I just want to say that I've heard from a lot of people that I know that, you know, I really don't care about the MMS at all, but a lot of people do.
I do.
Yeah.
I do.
Yeah.
It's a big deal for me.
Okay, Jeff, go.
Okay. All right, so the whole thing with pricing, I think Apple, when they were doing their keynote on Monday, they totally set everything up so that everyone would be incredibly pissed off because they said the new iPhone costs $199 and $299, and they just left it as that blanket statement. And then a few hours later, when we start seeing information from AT&T, everyone's going, "What the hell? We're looking at $600 and $700 for phones." And Apple just said it was $200 and $300. And so we immediately had a slap in the face. Apple could have helped soften that blow by simply saying with prices starting at $199 and $299. Right. And then we all would have known right away, okay, AT&T is about to give it to us right up the poop chute. But at least we would have known ahead of time. And it would have been a lot easier, I think, for some of the people that are complaining right now, just overall throughout the whole giant interwebs, to take it a little bit better.
Oh, I, you know what, though, Jeff? I think you point out exactly what Apple wanted to do. I think this is very strategic on Apple's part. I think they're pissed at AT&T.
Oh, yeah.
You know, as much as they're saying this relationship has been great and it's so wonderful, I think Apple is pretty fed up with AT&T and not being able to work with them. And I think the whole keynote was specifically designed to single out AT&T. I mean, when the slides came up and they were showing the features and everybody, you know, I'm watching the streams and everybody, the immediate thing they noticed is, oh, you know what? AT&T doesn't show AT&T on the MMS slide.
Yep.
You know,
and then everybody started laughing. And
the obvious is like Apple was putting all the blame for everything on AT&T.
Oh, yeah. It was very clear a couple times in the keynote that Apple was just handing AT&T to the wolves.
Mm-hmm.
And it's worked out great for them. I mean, I'm one of those wolves now because I'm just like so pissed about a lot of this stuff. The pricing aside, because again, I kind of agree with the Macalope's article that this is a little bit of misunderstanding on both sides with as far as how the pricing goes. And I understand why AT&T is doing it. I'm not saying they're good for it or it's a good situation, but you know, that I can at least comprehend. The other things, the other deficiencies, I don't understand because they're putting themselves behind other carriers. It seems like they're doing things to the detriment of gaining new subscribers or gaining, you know, a lot of champions, and they've converted so many people with the iPhone, and it's now like they're gonna screw it up. And I guess I shouldn't have expected anything more from AT&T, but it's sort of like I guess I was hopeful at some point, and now I've kind of lost a little bit of hope.
Well, how could they, you know, make this better? I'm thinking that maybe when they do introduce tethering, I think the right thing for them to do maybe...
Oh, the pricing better be damn good. It better not be $60. It better be $20 like the BlackBerry. If they make it $60, which is exactly what they're going to do, I'll go out on a limb and tell you that right now. It's going to be $60 a month for your tethering plan on an iPhone.
$20.
And people are going to be outraged again.
Ugh.
Guarantee it. I guarantee it.
You know, I hate to say this, but I think you're totally right. I think AT&T is going to totally screw people on the iPhone tethering plans.
You think it's going to be as high as $60 though?
It wouldn't surprise me at all.
Wow. It's going to be the same as getting an Evdo card. And what everybody's going to do is they're going to run out and get a MiFi from Verizon, and they would be smart to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then
yeah.
call up AT&T and tell them that they did that.
Yeah. And then go buy an iPod Touch and install Skype on it and just do Skype phone calls through their MiFi everywhere they go.
To AT&T subscribers.
That's right.
Yeah. Wow. I was hearing rumors of like $20.
That's what it should be. I mean, that's what they charge BlackBerry people, and that's what it should be. You know, at this point, do I have any faith in AT&T doing that? No. It would be wonderful. I hope that's the reality, and I hope AT&T's listening, and I hope the executives are smart, and that's what they do, because if they do, they will maximize their profits. But you know, I think they're not that smart. They're idiots. You know,
I think that pricing on tethering plans, it's a two-pronged thing. And the first prong, of course, is to generate a lot of revenue for the cell carriers. I think the other prong is to be a deterrent for widespread use of the service. And so $20 to a BlackBerry user in most cases is probably enough to deter the general BlackBerry population from tethering. But I think that by and large, your iPhone audience is already totally addicted to having full internet access on the go. Yep. And $20, of course, there'll be a lot of complainers. But for those people that really need the service, they'll go, okay, that's what everyone else is paying, so $20 it is. And then they'll suddenly have more people using that feature than they can support.
Yep. Yeah.
I mean, Jeff has hit the nail on the head. Right now, AT&T is in protect our data network mode. And that seems to be their mentality, is more than even making profits or, you know, benefiting from all of this stuff. It's, you know what, our network's already saturated with the iPhones and the iPhone 3Gs that we have now. God forbid what happens if we start allowing all these people to tether their devices, to send MMS video and pictures on their devices. And they don't know what to do. They are running scared right now. And then they know their network's not set up to handle it. And they know that they're way behind in doing the upgrades. So they're going to use measures like the pricing to prevent people from actually using the features that they have. So they're going to begrudgingly add tethering because so many people are up in arms about tethering. But the only control they have is going to be that pricing. And that's why I think they're going to go and say, you know what, you can have tethering, but it's going to be uber expensive so that only a small percentage of you are actually going to use it, because we don't want everybody on this thing, because the minute we let everybody on here, our network's going to melt down.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, not only is it just obvious that you're going to be, you know, using more data-intensive applications on a computer, but, you know, the iPhone is kind of crippled by its own hardware in that, you know, it can't, you know, surf the web as fast, even with the really fast data connection.
Right. You're not going to be downloading, you know, gigabyte BitTorrents on your iPhone, because once they get on there, you can't do anything with them anyway.
That and, you know, if you look at, you can post your videos to YouTube right from the phone.
Right.
Although I'm sure they're going to say, oh, it's over 10 megabytes. You're going to have to hop on Wi-Fi.
Yeah, who knows?
You know, I think that has a lot to do with why AT&T, out of the generosity of their heart, and I'm doing my air quotes, opened up their hotspot network to iPhone users.
Probably.
Without charging us.
That's a really good point. Yeah.
Now, I have to be grateful to them on that, because that enabled me this week to do my show. Because I was able to use my AT&T account to get unlimited Wi-Fi while at Starbucks, and that was very nice. I have to give them credit on that one.
So. Oh yeah, and I'm not complaining that we have that feature, because I use it all the time, and it certainly has been a lifesaver for me in many situations, including times when, you know, like the cable junction box in our area gets flooded, and I completely lose internet, but I have to be online. And so I can whip out my iPhone and hit Starbucks or whatever and start doing stuff immediately. It's a lifesaver.
Now, you can only do stuff on your iPhone, right? You can't do it on your Mac.
Right.
Okay.
This is where it gets weird. I'm going to have to say that because okay. I used my Mac with my AT&T Wi-Fi account, and the only AT&T account that I have is my iPhone account.
Oh, and it worked?
I used it for a full day, and here's a strange story. So, not only a strange story, but a good example of how messed up AT&T is. So, I was in Starbucks, and I thought I only got 2 hours of access a day with my, because I thought I was using my account through my Starbucks card, but I know my iPhone has, I think, you get full access to the thing. So anyway, I have an AT&T Wi-Fi account that I set up, through my AT&T account, which is my iPhone. I don't have AT&T internet service at home. My only AT&T coverage is through my iPhone. Logged on, was using the account. I was worried I was going to get cut off at 2 hours. So I called AT&T to ask them if I could buy a day pass because I didn't find any place on their website. It looked like they had switched over to a thing where you had to pay like $4, $3.99 for 2 hour blocks. And I said, I want to buy more internet access. I'm at this Starbucks. And they said, well, we can't help you. That's Starbucks. You have to talk to Starbucks. And I said, I don't think that's right. It's your AT&T Wi-Fi hotspot. I want to buy more. Can I pay you money, give you money for more access? And they said, no, we can't help you. So I go to AT&T or the Starbucks counter and they look at me like I'm nuts. And I knew they would because it was like, I want to buy more internet. Well, we can't help you. You need to talk to AT&T. I said, I just talked to AT&T. They told me to talk to you. Whatever. Forget it. And then I used the Wi-Fi with my account all day, every day for, several days in a row. So I don't know how it works. Apparently AT&T doesn't know how it works. So I would advise everybody, try it with your laptop, it might actually work. Just log in using your AT&T credentials that you would use to log into your AT&T account to check your iPhone minutes and all that.
I will try that.
Yeah, give it a shot. It worked for me.
I now have homework. I'm going on a field trip.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying it'll work for everybody. For whatever reason, it worked for me. I did my whole show and pulled down a 400 megabyte file and whatnot, all at a Starbucks. So
I think the moral of the story, or of this podcast, rather, is to screw over AT&T as often as you can. So like,
But our lawyers are advising us to call that pushing the envelope.
Okay, yeah, we're doing that.
Well, I tried to pay them. They apparently didn't want my money.
Well, I'm saying, like, if you go into the iTunes app and you surf the podcast directory, you can't download, quote unquote, you can't download an episode of a podcast that's over 10 megabytes, but you can certainly stream it.
Yeah, how about that?
So just click it instead of download, and you can do it right there. So that's what I'm doing. Yes.
I just said woohoo.
Oh, okay. It sounded I wasn't sure what it sounded like.
It sounded like an exclamation of glee to me.
Yeah, that's what it sounded like. Let's quickly breeze through these real quick because I think they're worth talking about. At least the Apple Store hours. Basically, Jeff, you can probably verify or deny, but basically AT&T and Apple are both opening early, an hour early, at most stores to provide iPhones for people who reserve iPhones. Is that correct?
Yeah, so that's the 7 o'clock window.
Okay.
And then at 8 o'clock, the stores are opening to the public.
I see. Okay, so I'm looking at...
Well, actually, let me backtrack a little bit.
Okay.
I know AT&T stores from 7 in the morning till 8 are going to be doling out the reserved iPhones.
Okay,
I'm
gotcha.
Not sure about the Apple stores.
It looks like if I go to my local Apple retail store here, it looks like they're opening at 8. They don't mention anything about... 7 o'clock for reserved iPhones. It looks
okay.
Like
so that's probably just an AT&T thing.
It just says we will be opening at 8 a.m. on Friday, June 19th for the arrival of the iPhone 3GS. So everybody who camps out the night before will, you know, get their iPhone a little bit earlier and they can go home and go to sleep.
Right. But before you go camp out, assuming that you can get into your store at 8 o'clock, check the Apple retail site, apple.com/retail, and see if the store you want to go to really will be opening at 8. And as an example, I checked the Boulder store, the Flatiron Crossing store, and the Aspen Grove store in Colorado, and then also checked the Colorado Springs store. All of them, except for Colorado Springs, were opening at 8.
Can I just mention that I'm very jealous that you have so many Apple stores right near you?
And that isn't even all of them. There's still the Cherry Creek store.
You don't have to really...
The Park Meadows store. I'm sorry. Am I rubbing salt in a wound? I'm sorry.
We've been through this before, right?
I think so.
Yeah, because I have two within 10 minutes of me and another three.
The closest one for me is an hour away.
You know, I went for a long time with just the Aspen Grove store, which is a really nice Apple store. That was the first one in Colorado. And that one's about a 45-minute drive. And then they opened up the Cherry Creek store, which on paper looks closer, but it takes longer to get to. And that was it for a long time. So when they opened the Flatiron Crossing store, which is 10 minutes from my house, luxury.
That's so nice. You can just go there on a whim.
And I do. I'll just decide, okay, I need to go in and see what's happening in Apple retail today. And so, I'll just drive over and walk in.
So since we're talking about retail stores right now, I just went to the Deer Park Apple store, which is a fantastic little Apple store. There's one maybe 10 minutes closer to where I am in the Woodfield Mall, but it's actually in a mall. So the Deer Park store is more in a strip mall sort of environment, so it's a little bigger and a little nicer, I think, because it gets less of the just random mall walker kind of stuff. But have you noticed recently those places are covered with apps? There are apps everywhere in the Apple stores.
Mm-hmm.
Just all over the place. Wherever they could find a surface to put apps and hang apps from the ceiling. It's very cool. I love it for the developers. It's very cool because, you know, doing what I do, I have a lot of relationships with the developers, and it's really nice to see them, you know, being promoted by Apple.
Yeah, it is. You know, the first store that I noticed that in was the San Francisco store that's near Moscone.
Mm-hmm.
And I noticed that actually during Macworld, they had all of those decals up in the window. Or was it a poster? It doesn't matter. But they had a ton of application icons for the iPhone. And that was the first place I noticed that. And it is cool to see all of those icon badges just everywhere you go now.
Yeah.
It tells me that Apple, okay, even if they're not truly appreciating the developers, they at least know how to properly exploit the applications to their benefit and the benefit of the developers.
Exactly. Yeah, so the other thing that I wanted to mention with my retail excursion, my iPhone 3G, when I actually got a replacement a few months ago, and I noticed immediately that there were some like darker spots on the screen and also like a piece of dust under the screen that I couldn't, you know, dust is very annoying on the screen. You usually brush it off, but when you can't brush off, it's totally annoying. So I brought it in there, and they said, okay, we'll replace it for you, but wait a second, we could just replace the screen for you. So this is something that they recently started doing. They can actually replace screens.
That's cool.
Yeah. And so it was so much more convenient than having to get a new iPhone and, you know, load all the data back on there, especially because, you know, I'm running 3.0 and actually get push notifications from Beehive because I'm working with them. And I wouldn't get that if I had a new phone because I'd have to re-register that phone.
I got to ask you now if they mentioned this, because I read this somewhere that they were recommending that people like cover up the SIM card slot or the ports, that basically that was the way they felt that dust was getting under there, under the screens.
I haven't heard anything about that.
I haven't heard that either.
It's just in doing my research, I read that somewhere that somebody had said it might have been on a forum or something like that, that one of the geniuses had told them, you know, put a piece of tape over the SIM card slot or
or over the dock connector.
I think it was the SIM card slot that they were saying was the culprit, although I don't know how any dust would get through there, but it seemed ludicrous to me, but I was just curious if they
I think I get
that,
a little bit of like lint built up in there over time. But
do you?
You know, I could, the one place I could see potentially lint and dust getting in and getting under the screen would be through the headphone jack.
Yeah.
And like my headphone jack had, you can see little dust fuzzy things in there, but it's not like it's building up dust bunnies. And that's probably because I rarely use my iPhone as an iPod. So, and I use a Bluetooth headset for the phone. So I almost never plug anything into the headphone jack.
Yeah. The weird thing about that, the dust under the screen thing is I've only ever heard it also happening on the 3G iPhones and not the first gens for some reason. So I don't know what's up with that.
Because the 3G sucks. It's made out of plastic, obviously.
Anyway.
Oh, well, clearly.
On the dust thing. It's good to know that they can just replace the screen now rather than the whole device.
Yeah, it was cool. And it felt like a brand new iPhone too because it was all shiny. No fingerprints. Can we? We should talk about the how do you pronounce that? Oilophobic.
Basically, it repels oil.
Yes,
we'll call it the penguin feature.
Yeah,
the penguin.
I like that.
Repels water. They have oil on their skin that repels water. I guess that's wrong. I got it wrong.
Yeah,
we can't call it the penguin feature.
Like mink or something.
I don't know.
What the furry little animal that we're going to exploit feature.
Something that hates oil.
Uh huh. Ducks. I don't know. I'm just
ducks hate oil, but it sticks to them.
Oh, yeah.
So the iPhone 3G is like the duck phone.
Yeah. No, the 3GS is. Because it's got the oil-repelling thing on the screen.
Well, no, the 3G would be like the duck phone because the oil sticks to it.
Oh, exactly. There you go. Gotcha. All right. And then the
work with the metaphors here, okay?
I'm trying to catch up. You guys are going really fast. I'm just slow.
So you know, you sent me this article and I was reading through it and I was like, well, this is kind of, I mean, it's neat, but at the same time, it's kind of silly. So the difference is in cleaning your iPhone first gen or your iPhone 3G, you have to use a damp cloth, right? A slightly damp cloth to kind of get rid of the oil. Whereas since the new iPhone 3GS has this oil repelling coating, you can just use a dry cloth.
Uh-huh.
Is that the difference we're talking about?
I guess. I mean, we're making a lot of assumptions based on that because we haven't seen the phone yet. But I guess we're assuming that we're going to get less fingerprints. Right? Is that the assumption? Or no? Or is it it's just going to be easier to clean it off?
I'm assuming it's just going to be easier to clean.
Okay.
So when you wipe it, you're not going to get the oily smears because the oil will just magically wipe off.
That's what I'm hoping for.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Yeah, that'll be nice. Boy, that comfort noise really freaks me out, the fact that it's not there. You guys are still there, right?
What?
Hey.
What the hell? The good news is I was out of beer, so I was able to go get more.
Okay, and that's where we'll cut in. So what we were talking about the oil, the duck phone, the oil on the screen being able to easily be wiped off. So that's cool. And we're done with that. yeah, so the random thing, the Apple in-ear headphones that didn't work with the volume control on the 3G, that works with the 3GS. And actually, the iPhone or the headphones that come with the new iPhone 3GS actually have the special little volume control thing that looks like that's going to make that one earbud much heavier.
Nice, because everyone needs to have lopsided ears.
Yeah. And I think that's it that we have to talk about. Want to move on to let's just touch on the leaked Matt case, because the one that iPod Observer had back in February, that was real. According to the FCC ID on the back of the phone in that screenshot, that is the FCC ID on the iPhone 3GS.
So at some point, they decided to go back to the glossy back instead.
Yeah.
Do we know that for sure? Or, I mean, aren't you able to get that information from the FCC filing? Like, how far in advance does that stuff come out publicly? Because I know that I remember talking about you can get that whole, we want to suppress the public viewing of this document, but how long can that happen for, and how early does that information leak out? Like, could somebody have not just gotten that ID from the FCC and then doctored it into a phone? I mean, it seems elaborate, really.
Right. But, well, okay. So I think the only reason that's, the only thing that's keeping me from thinking that could be the case, we didn't hear anything about there being a new FCC device, right?
Sure.
That we suspected that would be the new iPhone. I mean, even though it doesn't give us any information whatsoever, the blogosphere totally would have latched onto that, I think.
You know, I have another idea that just came to me.
Okay.
And it could be that this matte finish case wasn't what Apple was planning on using. It's just at the point that they were at in their development, they were using just like one-off prototype cases. And what they used for this submission just so happened to be this this case that didn't have the gloss on it.
I mean, would that make any sense, though? I mean, wouldn't they just, for the sake of using what they already have?
Well, who knows? I mean, we don't know what was going on in the development process. They might have been considering having a case that that was thicker or thinner or shaped different to accommodate components.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it could be almost anything. And there are submissions that for products that will have clear cases instead of colored, because that just happens to be where they are in their development phase. And in some cases, you'll see products that have smooth finishes instead of that lightly textured plastic that you see, because they haven't made it far enough into their production development yet to have finished the case design.
Okay, interesting. Yeah, and you mentioned that they have different, you know, versions of the case maybe. I haven't looked at the most recent keynote close enough, but they have in the past had special iPhones for the presentations with, you know, fat backs and you know, an extra cable coming out for the video.
Right.
So I don't know if they, you know, the 3GS has, you know, some special mod. I don't know. I haven't checked it out. But yeah, they have different versions.
Can I just make one last comment for the guys like Jeff and I who have been around long enough with Apple to even care? How nice is it to have the GS moniker back? After all,
yeah, you know, and I have a GS sitting in the other room right now.
I think Chris Breen was on the last show. He mentioned the same exact thing.
Although back then it was graphics and sound, so not speed. But it would have been cool if they would have said the G in the new device stood for the new faster graphics.
Mm-hmm. Well, they put a space
would have
been, there,
made
though.
It that much better.
There's a space to differentiate that.
You know, the too. Apple IIgs was a rockin' machine.
I have one. I have one of the first 1,000, the Woz Edition ones.
So do I.
Yeah. Oh, it's awesome.
The Woz Edition?
Yes. Oh, it was so cool. Okay, this shows you just how uber geek I can be. So when the Apple IIgs came out, there was a limited edition run. The first 1,000 that came off the production line had Wozniak's autograph silk screened on the front of the case.
Oh, geez.
Yeah, so I have an Apple IIgs in the other room that says Woz on the front of the case.
Me too. Yep.
Yeah. And that, you know, and I, at the time, I needed to replace my Franklin Ace 1000 Apple IIe clone. And I was looking at getting a Mac and looking at the 2GS. And when everything was said and done, I realized The GS costs less. It's more powerful. It can run a wider range of software, and it's full color. Why would I not take this computer?
Yeah, that's cool. I'm looking at the thing on Wikipedia for that now with the WAS signature. That's cool.
Yeah, it's very cool.
Okay, so back to iPhones, I think.
Well, I mean, it was iPhone because it's GS. Yeah. It was GS related, yeah. Yeah. So it's just kind of cool to have GS back in the Apple lineup. That was my only comment.
Mm-hmm. Well, it is. It's Space S, right? I think.
Yeah, it is. It's different. Just ruin it, Michael. Thank you.
I'm sorry.
Yeah. You know what, Michael? Screw you.
Yeah, I could hang up on you, but I wouldn't have a show then.
You could hang up on me, but I wouldn't be able to tell the difference from what Skype has been doing all night.
Uh-huh. Yeah, so let's move on to our iPhone picks, shall we? Jeff,
we'll
do you?
Try.
Well, let's let Adam go first, because Jeff always goes first.
Oh, okay. So, you know, although I don't know, my iPhone pick, and I don't think it goes this far back, but talking about, you know, different models of Macs and Apples and stuff like that, app that I have enjoyed on my desktop for a long, long time and just recently installed on my iPhone is Mac Tracker.
Oh, yeah.
Have I done Mac Tracker here yet?
I don't think so. I've definitely seen the app, though.
Oh, this is awesome. So I often will get questions from people asking about, you know, what I want to do a hard drive upgrade to this model Mac, or I want to do a memory upgrade, or what have you. And what Mac Tracker does and has done for years is provided up-to-date tech specs for just about every product that Apple makes or has made. I'm looking at it now. I don't think it goes back as far as the Apple IIs, but it does certainly cover just about every model Mac or notebook ever made. Also covers things like the Newton printers, Wi-Fi devices,
iPods,
different versions of Mac OS X, even all the way down to the system boot up sounds, which you can actually play the boot up sound from, say, like a Mac Classic or something like that.
Yeah.
So it's an invaluable tool. If you're, you know, IT person, you need to get up to date specs on your Mac, you're looking to do an upgrade either on the desktop or the iPhone, the app just rocks and it's free. And I would highly recommend it. It's a lot of fun, just even nostalgically, to get, you know, specific details about, you know, what was the graphics card that was in, you know, the first generation eMac. You can get those kind of details out of Mac Tracker.
Yeah.
That really is a cool application.
And it's free.
And it's free.
Just like the version for the Mac.
Yeah, they haven't, there are a lot of
donationware, I think, actually. I mean, I think they have a way to donate. So if you do like it, I would encourage you to donate to the developer if they allow that.
Definitely donate
for
the Mac Tracker, because that's very cool software. So Mac Tracker, free in the store. Jeff, what do you have?
You briefly mentioned my pick already.
Okay.
But I'll highlight it now. Delicious Library for the iPhone.
Nice.
Yeah, and so for people that aren't familiar with the application, on the Mac, Delicious Library catalogs your movies, your CDs, books, video games, software, just all these things that you collect. And it'll scan the barcode with the EyeSight camera on your Mac and add the information to its library. And it has a really slick interface. It's a lot of fun, easy to use. And I absolutely love it. And so Will Shipley released Delicious Library for the iPhone and iPod Touch during WWDC as a free add-on for the desktop application, which was a great way to do it. And so now you can have your library with you on the go, and you don't have to do that kind of hack workaround thing that he had before, which at the time was all you really could do, where he would have to build a website on your .Mac account, your Mobile Me account, so you could go look at it. Now you can just have it with you all the time, which is great because I'm always in the bookstore picking up movies and books and buying something I already have. And now I don't have to worry about that. I can just double check on my iPhone.
Yeah, so this is he calls it the widget version, the widget application that he's planning to release. And I'm pretty sure I'm allowed to, actually, I know I'm allowed to talk about what he told me at Macworld. So he briefed me on this and two other apps. Basically, the other one is a remote scanner for Delicious Library.
Oh, sweet.
So instead of bringing all your stuff to your Mac, you just take your iPhone and just scan it all in, and then it goes right to the Delicious Library and logs it there.
That's very cool.
And
is that going to require the GS with the autofocus camera?
We talked about that briefly. He said that there is a way, and I think there are other applications that do funky stuff with the camera, but basically he can read from the screen buffer. And so pull that in. So the image goes to Delicious Library for, like, on your Mac for the actual figuring out of the barcode, I think. But yeah, nice. He's working on it. It's not released yet, obviously.
But he's a genius when it comes to that. I mean, just getting the EyeSight camera to even work with barcodes, I know, was a challenge for him. And he's like the king of figuring out how to get a camera that Apple has built to actually recognize barcodes.
Yeah, so. It doesn't autofocus.
Well, the EyeSight does, I think.
Well, the original big tube EyeSight does. The one in your MacBook doesn't.
You're right. Yes, you're right.
That accounts for why it took a while for me to relearn how to scan things after I got a MacBook Pro.
Yeah. So, and that's obvious. Right. That app isn't released, obviously. He's still working. It took, you know, this long to release. I mean, he had a demo of this application that he showed me, and I think the big thing was, I mean, they're total perfectionists over at the Delicious Library, or at the Delicious Monster. I'm looking at it now. I didn't even realize it was released to the store yet, but it looks fantastic.
I just downloaded it. So, I mean, there you go.
You're going to love it. You're going to love it when you get ready to sync with your Mac, because it uses the same slick pairing system that you have for the Apple Remote application and for the Apple TV, where you put in the 4-digit code and then that's it. And then it just takes all the data from your Mac and sends it over your Wi-Fi network and puts it on your iPhone.
Yeah. Jeez. You know, I keep wishing that I used Delicious Library because it's so good. It looks so good.
You're not using Delicious Library?
I have nothing to put in there.
Have you ever bought a book?
I think so.
A movie?
Yeah.
An album?
A video game?
Video game?
Yeah.
Okay, there you go.
So I'll have
stuff to put in.
I'll have a couple things to put in there, I guess.
Even if you only have 5 things, it's still worth it because the app is that cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it will be worth it. I have it on my computer to play with, so I'll definitely check it out. So Delicious Library, the iPhone application, it is free in the App Store. And my pick is called Glowball. It's a game. 99 cents right now is an introductory price. And this thing totally blew me away. So we at the iPhone Alley are working on restructuring and adding some more people. And I think the temporary, we need to come up with some actual like names for these positions. I'm thinking along the lines of like salami captain.
I think that sounds like a reasonable title, depending on what they're actually doing.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know who the salami captain's going to be yet, but something along that line. So maybe, Jeff, you can help me out with that later. But this guy who's helping out right now, he basically kind of trolls the App Store for us. And I said, go through the last week of submissions in the store to start off, you know, and, you know, then you'll go on to doing, you know, every day. And he came back to me and said, I never realized how many fart apps were submitted to the App Store in a week. I don't even want to be exposed to that, but he did find a couple gems in that search, which is fantastic. So Glowball, Glowball, is a fantastic application game called, I don't know what I'm saying, Robot Superbrain. That's the company. It's a developer name, Robot Superbrain. The best name for a developer I've ever heard. And it takes its basic DNA from Brick Breaker games. So you're a little ball that glows, and you go through these various mazes. So it's not just you know bouncing a ball back and forth. You're actually going through mazes and breaking these bricks. And depending on, you can get power ups. So you can get one that after you touch a brick, it just blows up and all the other ones around it blow up, or you can, you know, electrify them and they'll all zap each other, or you can freeze them and it'll break all of them. And there are tons of bad guys that do different things that you have to avoid. And like, if you get stuck in, captured by one of the bad guys, you shake your phone to bust out of the, his grasp, and it kills him. And, you know, it's super cool. And the thing that just totally puts it over the top, even though it's a very smooth game and it's very well thought out and there's a lot of stuff to it, it's incredibly good looking. It looks so good, and the sound effects are even just they're totally up to par with the graphics. So when your ball first enters the original or the level that you're going into, it kind of teleports in, like Star Trek style. So cool. You see all these lights just kind of focusing in on this white glowing ball, and it makes like a Star Trek noise when it comes in, and it's just so much fun. 99 cents. It's totally. I mean, this is an introductory price, so I don't know how long they're going to keep it at 99 cents, but it's so worth it. I think they're going to bring it up to like $4 when they finish their sale. But it was just released. It's awesome. Totally worth it. Glowball. And yeah, check that out. Okay.
You know what? Can I do a re-recommend, by the way?
No.
Just because there was an update this week?
No, you can't.
I'm going to anyway.
Okay.
I think I recommended a while back Flight Control, mm-hmm. a game from Firemint. Yeah. They just did an upgrade this last week where they added new airfields and additional planes and a high score system, which, among other things, works with your location feature. So you can see how you're ranked just locally, like in your area, which is really nice because you get to be higher up on the rankings. But it was a really nice update, and I kind of knew it would eventually be coming, but it came out and it just made that me revisit that game. And it's still just an awesome, totally fun game for the iPhone. And it is also 99 cents.
Yeah. So that actually reminds me of something that I totally missed. And there's actually a pun on Glowball. So it's, you know, the word global as well.
Right.
So you've got, this rotating sphere, which is the Earth, and it shows all the different high scores. And so, you know, it takes your location information and places you on the map, and it says, you know, you have to get so many points to, be the best in this, you know, radius of the circle. And so once you get past that, your radius grows, and you dominate more of the area with your high score. And so it's just that much cooler with the added, addition of the global ranking. It's just very cool, very well integrated with the game. Again, the graphics are phenomenal.
Yeah, I think the point that you bring up, and it's really nice to see developers taking advantage of, is the geolocation features in the iPhone and doing that really creatively, and to make it more relevant as you're playing these games, to be like, hey, you're the best in a given area.
Yeah.
And hey, if you wanted to, it gives you more incentive to play the game more, to try and get better, to, you know, and not be so discouraged by, you know, of everybody in the world, you're ranked 3,852nd.
Yeah.
But you know what? In your 10-mile radius, you're number one, baby. You know, so go with joy.
You know, and that counts.
That counts.
Yeah. Yeah.
It actually counts more, I think, for more people. You know, you don't care about somebody in, you know, halfway around the world,
mm-hmm.
is 10 times better than you. You just care that you're 10 times better than your neighbor.
Yeah.
Right. Because they're the tangible person
that you can taunt and make fun of. Yes, yeah, absolutely.
Exactly.
I think
that's
Forensic,
what it's all about.
I think Forensic had that kind of thing in there. It didn't have a big, you know, map, which makes it, I think, so much cooler. But yeah, so since Adam, you did an add-on pick, I'm going to do an add-on pick too.
Sweet.
And Jeff, you're welcome too as well.
Okay.
But Jeff, I think you like Daft Punk, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Work it, make it, do it. Makes us harder, better, faster, stronger.
So that
nice.
That is the iDaft application. It's free, as in free, no money. It's awesome. It's a little. It just gives you a grid of lyrics for harder, better, faster, stronger, and you can tap out the lyrics. And gets better because it has the beat minus the lyrics that you can play over it. So you can hit this, and it'll start doing it. So you can do the song along with it, and you can even switch the tones. So you can. So it's the higher pitch for the song.
Nice.
It's free, dude.
You know, you can't beat that price. Free is my favorite price.
For Daft Punk, for good app.
That's very cool.
Yeah.
All right, so now here's my extra app, which I don't know if we've done before, but have we done Pagel before?
No.
Oh, my God. Pagel is insanely addictive. And it was on sale, I think, last week for 99 cents, and it's regularly like $4 or $5. And holy crap, is it awesome.
It's the PopCap one, right?
Yeah, it's from PopCap Games, and they always make good stuff. And you shoot this little ball out into this field that has all of these little pegs all over it, and every peg you hit disappears, and the objective is to clear out all of the orange pegs with a limited number of balls. And when a ball hits a peg, it'll bounce, and so you can hit more than one peg with a ball. And if you get really good, you can figure out what some of the angles are, and then hit one and bounce it to hit another. And it's a very simple game. I mean, that's the whole thing. Just shoot these balls and get rid of the orange pegs. But they found just the coolest way to make it into this addictive game, because each level gets progressively harder. Then things start moving, and then they add in other shapes that you have to work around and blast through. And it's very cool.
Awesome. I haven't checked that out.
Oh, definitely check it out. And in a few days, you will be using my name in vain because of all of the time that you've lost playing this game.
I will. I already do, but for other reasons.
Well, yeah, but that's different.
Uh-huh, yeah. Okay, so that was our double iPhone pick segment. And I think it was, you know, needed because last week we didn't have any picks, right?
And now I'm going to second Jeff's pick because it's awesome.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Awesome. So 99 cents for Pagel.
No. I was going to second his Delicious Library pick. Oh,
okay.
Sorry.
So seconded for Delicious Library, which is free.
Yes, which I just downloaded.
And I'll second
and played
Pagel
with
too.
For like
okay.
2 seconds.
Yeah.
And it was sweet.
Okay. Yeah. So you can find all of our show notes, including the applications and products and all that stuff that we pick. So if you're in the car and listening to this, you know, face palming the whole way on your commute, you can
wonder how many ass end accidents we're responsible for.
I hope a lot.
You know, it's how we roll.
Yeah, totally. So iPhoneLA.com/podcast, and you can get the show notes and all that fun stuff. And of course, iPhoneLA.com is a place where you can get more news, tips, and reviews every single day about the iPhone to get your iPhone fix. And let's see, if you want to send us feedback, tell us about your accident due to our podcast@iPhoneLA.com. And of course, Jeff Gamet is at the Mac Observer, MacObserver.com, iPod Observer, iPodObserver.com, JeffOrama.com. That's where you can find all of his stuff, right?
Yes, it's like my little Jeff Nexus.
And if you can't figure out the dashes in between the O and the Rama, go to The Virus You Want to Catch. Is that it? Right?
That's just the most awesome thing. And thanks again to, and see, I forgot his name again. How embarrassing. The guy that set that up.
Super awesome.
You totally
rock.
Yes. You rock.
Yes. So it's a longer URL, but you don't have to put in dashes.
That's true. Apparently some people have issues with punctuation, and that's okay.
That'd be me. And Adam Christensen's at the MacCast, MacCast.com, and Twitter.com/MacCast. Thanks for being here, Adam.
Yep, that's me. Thanks for having me again.
And I forgot to mention Jeff's Twitter, which is Twitter.com/JGamet. And you will want to follow that right now, as well as Adam's. They're both fantastic on Twitter.
If you'd been following this afternoon, you could have gotten live updates from me being directly underneath the tornado warning area. It was exciting.
Oh, awesome. I'm assuming it didn't touch down near you.
None of them touched down near me, but the cells were hitting directly above my place. And so I was standing outside looking up, and you could actually see the two walls of clouds hitting each other and swirling and spinning. And then the hail came, so I had to go inside.
Side note, Twister's in my Licious Library account, which I just rewatched about a month ago. And there's an amazing array of like really famous actors in there.
Yeah,
that
there
I
is.
Had forgotten was yeah. were in that movie.
Who? What are the off the top of your head? I'm putting you on the spot. What are the
Philip Seymour Hoffman?
Yeah. He is in that, isn't it? Wow.
Yeah. Just strange.
Just a random. Like he's one of the random dudes in the truck. And
yeah, exactly.
Is Jack Black in there too?
No.
I'm just
unfortunately no. That
Jack
would just
Black
that would put
into...
it over the top. But you know. And then there's like Bill Paxton and Helen Hunt and
yeah.
You know, and any movie with Helen Hunt in it is going to be good because she's just so darn cute.
Mm-hmm. And my Twitter, twitter.com/MichaelJohnston, and iPhone Alley's Twitter, twitter.com/iPhoneAlley. That's where you get the actual iPhone content. My Twitter is not really. It's something else. Go experience it for yourself.
Yeah, that's the best description I've ever heard of your Twitter account. It is something else.
Yeah, it's something I can't describe here, but you'll have to figure it out for yourself. And with that, another episode of the iPhone Alley podcast is in the can.
And it does make a difference in the audio quality.
Jeff is going to be silky smooth.
Ooh, I'll be smooth for you tonight.
That's not
That's just not right.
That's not creepy at all.
No, I'm sure it's not. So what are we going to do? I know I didn't feel creeped out sitting here all alone.
Saying that. Does, you don't tell Erica that you're actually talking with someone on the internet. She thinks you're just talking alone to your computer.
You know, I'm hoping that's what she thinks. And she knows when I'm podcasting. Well, first, of course, she just knows because I tell her I'm podcasting.
Because you put a sock on the doorknob.
Exactly. And but she also knows because she'll hear me yell out obscenities just randomly.
Oh, you don't do that normally.
Well, not in the pattern that I do when I'm podcasting.
Okay, it's a different thing.
Yeah, and like the other day when I was doing the Mac Jury podcast, you were there when Chuck did his countdown, and then I yelled vagina.
Yeah, that was good. That was fantastic.
And Erica was upstairs. And she hears vagina really loud, and so she knew
that you were podcasting.
That we must have been recording by that point.
Yeah. Actually, you do sound different.
Yeah, you sound a little different too. You know, the difference for me is that while you were installing the new beta of Skype, my balls dropped.
Yeah, that makes sense. That's what I was actually going to ask if you had just gone through puberty.
I did. Yeah. In that 30-second window when you were offline.
Yeah.
I totally went through puberty.
Adam?
Yes.
Are you face palming now?
Yes.
Made on a Mac, motherfucker.